So, the course has been advertised as the life of Prabhupada, but it's actually the life and teachings of Prabhupada. Mostly, we're going to cover the life as described in sequence in the biography, Prabhupada's birth up until 1977, all his activities. So it's a biographical look at things. But we'll feel free at any time to stop and talk about Krishna conscious philosophy as he taught it. In this first class, I want to introduce some things that will be thematic for the whole course, so they're important. And the first one is to understand the two lives of the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, or pure devotees in general. So these two lives, they have different names in Sanskrit. One terminology we have is that there is a prakat and an aprakat manifestation of the pure devotee. Prakat means that which is manifested. And aprakat means it's not seen, it's not manifested. Also, you can use words like sadaka and siddha. Sadaka means devotees who are in this world, who are practicing to reach perfection. And siddha means they are perfect. Now, I'll explain how this is not exactly applicable to Prabhupada, but this terminology may be used. To put this into plain words, we mean that Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada lived a life that we could observe to some extent, either as eyewitnesses or we've heard about it. As eyewitnesses, we know that he began a storefront in New York City, and he was a sannyasi. He dressed in sannyasi clothes, and he spoke. We have his lectures, and he wrote his books. He went to so many different places, and so on. All spiritual activities, but all performed in this world as an elderly sannyasi, pure devotee. And yet there's another life, which is his eternal identity in the Leela of Krishna. So this is the general thing I'm referring to. Now, what we'll be discussing in the life of Prabhupada is mostly the prakat, or manifested activities of Prabhupada. I remember when I first even heard the concept that there was another life to Prabhupada other than Swamiji or Prabhupada as we knew him, I found it objectionable and disturbing even. Partly because I remember it was presented by someone who was speculating about it. I didn't like to think things out to that extent, keeping it simple as it was, worshipable and lovable. So I remember one person said, no, actually, when you go to the spiritual world, Prabhupada won't be there, but he will introduce you to Krishna and then he will go away. I said, oh, I don't like this at all. Some philosophy that Prabhupada will go away. I didn't like to think of it when anybody brought it up. Even if there was something to it, I thought it was certainly beyond my realization. And there's so much to think about Prabhupada and to serve Prabhupada and what we have. But of course we knew, even from the beginning, we had the sentiment that Prabhupada was with Krishna. Krishna talked to Prabhupada, and sometimes there might be some thought or discussion that in Vrindavan, in eternal Vrindavan, how may Prabhupada be playing with Krishna or in relationship with Krishna? But after his disappearance, then this became a little more something that we would come to terms with as a reality. For example, in the Premadvani prayers, we say, after the disappearance of the pure devotee, not during his appearance, Nityalila Pravishta, which indicates that he is now gone to his eternal Leela. He was here on Krishna's business, and now he is returned to be with Krishna. And we began to note other Shastric evidence in a similar way. For example, we always sang the verses of the Guru Vastakam, and that one verse especially, Nikunja Yuno Ratikali Siddha Yayali Bir Yuktira Pekshaniya Tatatri Daksha Atibalabhasya Vande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. The spiritual master is very dear because he is expert in assisting the gopis, who at different times make different tasteful arrangements for the perfection of Radha and Krishna's conjugal loving affairs within the groves of Vrindavan. I offer my most humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. I think Jayadwaita Maharaj once asked Prabhupada about this. And does it mean... What did you ask?
Well, what I wanted to ask was whether it meant that the spiritual master was in the spiritual world or at the same time that he was walking around in the material world. But I think Prabhupada must have been asked before, what if the spiritual master was in a different mellow than comfortable? So he answered to that.
He said, yes, he's doing this if he's in that line. So this verse is there. There's also the whole tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, in which we learn that the predecessor acharyas, not only that they have their identity, but at different times it's been revealed what exactly it was, what their name is, what their service is in the spiritual world. And almost all of them are from six Goswamis, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Prabhananda Saraswati, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Narottam Das Thakur, and so on. They were all revealed as being Gopi Manjaris. So this identity is there. But the idea I had that, oh, I don't want to be away from Prabhupada, was also relieved the more we understand about the two lives. And that is, he who is your guru eternally is your guru in his form or her form in the spiritual world also. And this is expressed in Narottam Das Thakur's Prarthana in Song 21. He prays to his spiritual master, Lokanath. O Lokanath, O my master, please be merciful to me and bless me that Sri Sri Radha Krishna's lotus feet may be always manifested within my mind. I wish to have your association when you manifest your form as a gopi friend of the divine couple, this desire continually arises in my mind. Prabhupada was very grave about this. He did not reveal this or talk about it much, except in sometimes cryptic references or behavior, because it was not it wasn't his mission, it wasn't appropriate for time, place, and the persons. So having said that, we're going to let that concept rest in one sense, but not as a dead issue. I want us to be aware of that as we mostly discuss his activities as in this world. But we'll be aware in different ways, and when it's appropriate, any one of you can bring up some reference to Nitya Lila, Nitya Siddha devotees, characteristics of devotees who are not ordinary souls, who come from the spiritual world and do the work of Krishna here. Also, not to make too much of a duality about this, the form that Srila Prabhupada appeared in is also part of the Chaitanya Lila. Chaitanya Lila existed 500 years ago, and it goes on eternally in Swaita Dweep, a portion of Goloka Vrindavan. But also, the continuation of that movement in this world is Chaitanya Lila. And therefore, the term I use, sadhaka and siddha, we can't say that Prabhupada was actually a sadhaka, a devotee who was just practicing. But he acted like a devotee, like a human being in this world. So, to discuss the activities of Prabhupada in Chaitanya Lila, as it manifested in the 20th century, in his activities, that's not an unimportant thing. That's not temporary, material, and so on. That's also spiritual. So there's Chaitanya Lila, there's Krishna Lila, and there's Srila Prabhupada. I wanted to read a stanza from Remembering Srila Prabhupada at this point. And this was written a little bit in the mood of defending the presentation of studying and appreciating Prabhupada as he appeared in this world, which means in a human-like way, not constantly referring to his eternal identity and his perfection, in Krishna Lila, but his perfection as a preacher. And this stanza suggests that what we did perceive of Prabhupada is glorious, and it does have a deeper meaning, which if we're perceptive, we can feel and sense at every moment. This was written about Prabhupada's activities of printing his books in India, when he lived in Vrindavan and went to Delhi to print his books, and he worked so hard. One tells me a Nitya Siddha cannot be tired, and we shouldn't say that he reeled in the streets from heat stroke, shouldn't say he displayed impatience or anger with the printers. But they don't know. These are also transcendental glories. He is not an ordinary man, therefore he goes to Chowri Bazaar only on Krishna's business, and he prints the Bhagavatam and collects for that only, lives and breathes and works, and gets tired and impatient and reels in the streets, falls down gored to advance the cause of Krishna consciousness. They don't know the mind of the Acharya, nor do I, but we hear from him, quote, so even though we are not in the Himalayas, even though we talk of business, even though we deal in rupees and pice, still, simply because we are 100% servants of the Lord and are engaged in the service of broadcasting the message of his glories, certainly we shall transcend and get through the invincible impasse of Maya and reach the effulgent kingdom of God to render him face to face eternal service in full bliss and knowledge. So I'm inviting you, as the course goes on, as we're absorbed in something that Prabhupada did in some place or other, that you keep aware, and you may bring up some point about Nitya Siddha, or remind us of his eternal identity, maybe some hint that we see in something he said, and so on. That will help enrich the presentation. To keep an eye on the other dimension while we mostly speak of this dimension. Now I want to introduce another theme of treatment that will go on for the whole course, and that is three ways of studying Srila Prabhupada. One way is studying his life as Leela. Which we do for the nectar of hearing his activities. He who is so great, who is so beloved to us, needs no other reason or excuse, justification for talking. Then the second way that we'll study is how Prabhupada's life reveals aspects of Vaishnava Siddhanta, or philosophy, Vaishnava philosophy. I'll just define these and I'll give extended examples. And the third is studying his life for practical application in devotees' lives in ISKCON. So I'd like to talk a little in each of these modes. And I'll do it all in thinking of Prabhupada in his role as a writer or transcendental author. So if we think in that way in terms of Leela, then we think of so many stories, especially tend to visualize scenes of Prabhupada actually writing. There's one nice story that Tosan Krishna was a witness to. And Prabhupada, when he was traveling in America, he went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where they had just a very beginning center there. And they had an apartment for him to stay in. It was a completely bare apartment, almost completely bare, just a mattress, and some insects were there. And he was given a servant. So the servant remembers that when it was time to take rest, he went in the servant's room, and Prabhupada was in his room, turned out the lights, but there was a big glare from a street light coming right into his room. So Prabhupada didn't sleep, but he stayed up. And at that time, he was traveling, his luggage was a wooden trunk, which a devotee, Narayan, had made, very sturdy, probably very heavy and inconvenient. So Prabhupada had this wooden trunk, and he began to write on it through the night in hand. And so his servant remembered that all night I would hear this sound of the pen writing on the page on the wooden trunk. Actually, Prabhupada was so persistent that in this schedule that he would get up around 1 o'clock, wherever he was, he had a kind of movable paraphernalia, a low desk, certain articles, a Sanskrit book, dictionary, commentaries of Srimad Bhagavatam. And these would be carried by his servants and they would be set up. and he would work. Later using the dictaphone. So it's nice to remember some of these writing stories. This is an example of how we can think of Prabhupada as a writer in terms of Leela. Now if we think of Prabhupada as a writer in terms of Vaishnava Siddhanta, we'd want to look at what he wrote. We would be studying the philosophy. We're not going to be doing that so directly, like we're not going to study the whole Bhagavatam and so on, but we do want to be philosophical and sometimes bring up his teachings. So just to demonstrate, here's Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. We'll be talking about how he wrote these Bhagavatams and produced them himself in India. And I have one of the first volumes, one of the books that he printed here. So he begins the Srimad Bhagavatam introduction. Oh, I just see what I was going to read. I found something more interesting. On one of the front pages, there's a page that says the motto. And this was dropped out in later editions. He says here, "It is admitted, even in the higher circle, that in fact the whole root and background of Indian culture is wrapped in the Sanskrit language. And we know that the foreign invaders of India could break down some of the monumental architectural work in India, but they were unable to break up the perfect ideals of human civilization so far kept hidden within the Sanskrit language of Vedic wisdom." I remember when I first read that, how attractive and amazing it is that there's this mystical knowledge or hidden knowledge. And even the invaders, they could break down the temples or even destroy deities and kill people, but they could never touch this sacred knowledge somehow. It was hidden in the Sanskrit. So that's very nice that it was preserved and no atheists could destroy it. But still, it's not doing anyone any benefit, or many people benefit in this secret condition. Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature, ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. We have just begun to give it rendered into English with broader outlook, and it is the duty of the leading Indians to spread up the culture all over the world at this momentous hour of need. So actually the Acharya is like that. He has a key to open the Vedic knowledge. It's hidden. It's like in a treasure chest. And we're very thankful that it's there and that it's in this very secure treasure chest. But we can't get at it. So the Acharya has the key and he opens it. So that image means that even if we do have books whose pages we can open, we cannot enter it, either by language difficulty or the philosophy is not open to us. So Prabhupada described this as the motto of what he was about to do. So whenever we look at the text of his actual writing, we can appreciate this is a very, this is not a matter of translation only. This motto is a very personal statement of what he intends to do on behalf of Vyasadeva and the Parampara. So that's studying Prabhupada in terms of philosophy as a writer. Then the other one was application of lessons. So what we'll do is, the method will be to talk about Prabhupada's childhood, for example, and then stop and ask some questions of how this way that Prabhupada lived. I'll raise some questions of how it may be applicable or not, something Prabhupada did, to ISKCON today, and ask you to give answers, and I'll try to explain it also. So in terms of Prabhupada being a writer, we can bring up questions and or lessons such as what Prabhupada wrote. It's important for us to read as his followers or devotees. That's what Prabhupada said, that these books were for the devotees to read. So how to read, how to have enthusiasm to read, how to study, which books to read, in what order, in what way. And this would be applied activity. And then Prabhupada was an author who wrote books, but he wanted the books distributed. We can talk about that. His connection with his disciples. That he wrote and he expected them to produce the books, to edit them and publish them. And it took years for the devotees to realize that this was their responsibility and to develop the skills to actually do it. Prabhupada, he produced his books all by himself in India, 3 books in a few years. Then he came to America and had disciples in such an advanced, materially advanced country, and no books were produced. So it took a while for him to impress that this is your duty as disciples, to produce my books. And then even when they started doing that, they still didn't realize how to distribute the books. He said, it's your duty to distribute these books widely. And the movement became successful as we began to understand this and produce and distribute and read. Also, when we see that Prabhupada as a writer and intent on that, some of us may even think that we shall be writers also. And Prabhupada writes, the first duty of a person in the renounced order of life is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction towards self-realization. So, mainly, the way to apply the lessons of Prabhupada as an author is to, as I just said, produce, distribute, and read. But there's also the implication that not only he writes, but his students should write. And there are letters to that effect. You should write for Back to Godhead magazine, or you should write your realizations, and so on. So this can be another way to apply.
You say that the disciples also should write their realization. Is that by writing, you become a Krishna conscious, or we are Krishna conscious, then you should read them again over and over. So that makes us more Krishna conscious, right?
I'm not sure I understood. Prabhupada said we should write our realizations. So, what is your question? If we write, will we become Krishna conscious by writing? Yes, it's a kind of it's a practice of self-realization. it may come under the category of kirtanam or smaranam. You have to hear, and then when you hear, then you can have some realization. Prabhupada said this in his lecture today. You write down what he said. But then you may write something that you understood in your, or write what he said in your own words. So the writing helps you to remember, and it also can help you to realize. You could realize your shortcomings. It's a way, it's writing, this kind of writing that he says, write for your realization. It's a little different than write for Back to Godhead magazine. Although, if you start writing for your realization, then you get some realizations, then you can start putting it together and write for Back to Godhead. And if you take Jai Dwaita Maharaj's editing course, you learn how to make it into an actual, not just some notes, but into some kind of a communication, where other people will be very attracted to read it. But in the first stage that you're talking about, write your realization, it's mostly for your own benefit. In fact, writing is mainly for your purification, Prabhupada says. Whether you know it or not, we write for purification, in the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So, it's an intensive kind of thinking, whereby, as you write, things come out that you were not aware of. The realization may take the form of your shortcomings. that Prabhupada said in his lecture today that we should be completely free of sense gratification and give our lives to the service of the spiritual master. I realize that I am not doing this. I fall so far short of this. What can I do to improve this? And then writing, you may even start to say, well, what I actually should do, I should stop eating so much, or I should stop sleeping so much, and I think I'm going to, what I really should do is this or that. So writing can be approached in that way. Or that Prabhupada said that God is in everyone's heart. I wonder how this applies to the non-devotees. But now I remember that he said in Srimad Bhagavatam that actually Krishna is in the heart, or he says in Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, we should see everyone as equal, having spirit soul in them. So realization can be putting together different parts of the philosophy for so many things. Any questions in particular about so I've chosen three ways of studying. It's arbitrary. You could study in many ways, and these three ways are not going to be like airtight compartments. They're going to overlap. Sometimes when we're talking about Leela, we'll be talking about, in the next breath, we'll be talking an applied lesson or philosophy. But I'd like us to be aware of these categories as we move from one to the other. And I may be telling some philosophy, and then if you think of a good story of then you could tell us that story about Prabhupada, which exemplifies that part of the philosophy. Yes.
From this item of study of Prabhupada's Leela, can you explain about the marriage life of Prabhupada, where he said that I was come to him to drop of wealth, is it? That he spent to maintain his family?
You asked the question about something Prabhupada said about his own family life. That's very specific, and we'll be covering that period of Prabhupada's life in particular classes. Probably better that I discuss it then. I'm not sure if you've got an accurate quote either, but if you do ask questions and you quote something, try to get it right to begin with, so we can know what we're talking about. Or if you don't know, I can try to remember, or someone else can try to remember. Start with whatever you know. But I think I know what you're referring to. Why don't you save that for when we're talking about Prabhupada as a Grihastha?
I heard that we shouldn't address Prabhupada's journey to Leela Pratishtha, because we consider what he's told here. That's only for other master chants.
Well, I guess we'll get into some area of controversy then. But if it's good for past acharyas, then it's good for Prabhupada too. In the sense that he's here, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati is also here. He's not less here. But he's gone into the shades of the past, and only Prabhupada is here. Prabhupada is here, he's here. They're all here. And in the sense that they're not here, that they've joined Nitya Leela, it's true of Prabhupada, it's true of them. He should not be made a singular example that he's different in that way. If it's tradition in Gaudiya, if it's the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism to say Nitya Leela after the disappearance, then we can apply it to him. I think that would be the question. So we have to find evidence that is true. And if it is, then it's all right to say it. If by usage in ISKCON people don't want to say it, that's another thing. If they want to say only Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parabhajakacharya. But I don't think it's wrong to do what is traditional. ISKCON sometimes makes exceptions to Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, but we shouldn't, if we do that, say that not to follow tradition is wrong. Say to follow the tradition is wrong. Want to make any comment on that? Yes.
When you say Tani Kalila, you refer to spiritual master, who actually was in direct relation with Krishna and entered the spiritual master, spiritual world. So is this applied to any spiritual master or just a specific spiritual master who achieved that highest position?
It would apply to someone who has achieved that position.
So it's kind of a tradition. It can be a routine that whoever the spiritual master who passed from the world is immediately.
Yeah. Well, that difficulty is always there, of applying exalted terminology to people who may or may not deserve it. We've had a dose of overdoing that in ISKCON in the past. It's not my responsibility to discuss that right here. any more than I already did. Yes?
The question also that the reason why we don't say Niksha Lila is because Shri Prabhupada didn't say it. They were saying we cannot learn the grace.
That's a good reason that he didn't say it. I ended earlier than I didn't have as much material as I thought I would have for the first class, so if there are more questions, especially about your expectations of the class and anything. Yes?
Could you mention something that Prabhupada did say about this?
Okay. Because I don't think, as I remember the course, I don't think I'll be treating this again. If it was a little startling for you to hear me talk so much about it, I'm not going to be talking about it more in theory, except that we can, as I said, I invite you to bring up things. So what did Prabhupada ever say? The things that he said, sometimes they were like, for such a profound subject, they were like lighthearted references, which we took as significant. Toward the end of his life, when it was getting closer to his actually going back to Godhead, he would say things. I remember in that very dramatic time when Prabhupada had decided he would leave, but the devotees were pleading to him, don't leave. And he said, well, actually Krishna has given me the free will. So he said, if he's given you the free will, then please stay. So he said, all right. And then devotees were trying to encourage him in that way. And one devotee said, Prabhupada, you have to stay because we're working on your palace. And it will be finished in the spring, and then you'll get better, and then you can come to your palace. And Prabhupada said, we shall see which palace I will go to. So that was a kind of a reference. As I say, that was a lighthearted reference. Sometimes when Prabhupada would lecture, he would suddenly stop, as if he was overpowered by feelings, or rather not as if, he would become overpowered by feelings and not be able to speak anymore. One can't know the mind of the Acharya, but it was obvious that he was in a different world than just being in the temple room talking to the devotees of ISKCON. And we couldn't help but make our guesses as to what it was. But certainly it was some kind of revelation of coming from Krishna, to between Prabhupada and Krishna, which indicated the other world. And you asked for things that he said. Got any memories?
There's one, I wasn't there personally, but it was, I heard secondhand, when they made Prabhupada's shirt.
Cowboy shirt?
Cowboy shirt. Remember that?
I remember the cowboy shirt.
They made Prabhupada's cowboy shirt, and someone said to Prabhupada that Prabhupada, you look just like a cowboy. Prabhupada said, I am also a cowboy.
Also, in the in conversations, it's in the conversations book, devotees brought up this topic. The Prabhupada, we've read that in order to go to Krishna Loka, you have to follow an eternal resident of Goloka, and that's how you can enter. So, we think, someone said, we think that you're that eternal resident, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, I don't think exactly what he laughed or something, but there was like approval of the statement. Yes, you consider me the eternal resident. He also said, "Vrindavan is my home." So that can be. These things have many levels on which to take them. Everything has an external level of meaning and a confidential meaning, and he doesn't talk about it much. But if he calls Vrindavan his home, what does that mean? Just that he lives here a few weeks in the year, or does it mean something else? And I would say, though, the strongest evidence is not personal remarks, but the actual conclusion of the philosophy that we all have an eternal identity in our swarup. In our case, it's covered. So since we always want to understand that Prabhupada is the topmost, whatever is topmost, he's it, he doesn't fall short. He's not a sadhaka who hasn't realized something that ought to be realized. He's not being held back from something that you attain when you're perfect. So the philosophy is, perfection means spiritual body, means Krishna Leela. So how can Prabhupada be exempt from that which is the goal? Rather than, in a personal remark, we have to draw the conclusion, although we don't have the details, of what he was in humility and in gravity, not going to talk about. Because what could we understand? What can we understand? We have to understand how to serve the spiritual master in this world and deserve to go to the other world. But if you went into the computer database or thought about it, you could collect quite a few of these kind of confidential remarks in terms of what he said about himself and certain habits of his and certain inclinations. Yes?
Did you say that Prabhupada purposefully didn't reveal so much this type of apricot relation with Krishna because, like more or less you say, it's work hard, samadhi later, first of all.
Right. In 1967, I was typing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and I read that section. That you should follow an eternal resident of Vrindavan. So I asked Prabhupada in the letter, what does this mean? He said, the effect that, do not inquire into this at the present time. It's a very advanced subject. You'll understand at the right time. So, not telling us because we weren't ready. And he wanted us to be very active according to our passion, according to our inability to think of such things, and according to the needs of, especially this reason, the needs of the movement, which was to create devotees and start the Krishna consciousness movement. So what would have been the benefit or the purpose of that, of telling us that? He saw that it wasn't something that was going to help us or help the movement. However, if anyone doubts that Prabhupada is pure devotee and has the topmost knowledge to give to us, that he's empowered, then for that reason we certainly have to be ready to explain to everyone that that is not the case. Alright, so I'll let you go. Usually we'll end though at 25 after sharp, so that you can go to where you have to go and try to get here on time too. So now these books can be given out and you can read the first two chapters tomorrow. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Alright, today we're going to discuss about the childhood, boyhood, youth of Prabhupada. But before we get into that, I wanted to discuss some very basic thinking about this course in terms of thinking about a justification for studying the life of Prabhupada. What might be the objection to studying this? The objection might be raised that this is not a substantial subject, such as the Shastra, Srimad Bhagavatam, or discussing Krishna, some philosophy of the Supreme Lord, or something taught by the Supreme Lord. So to study Prabhupada's life, not as substantial. So to that we would reply that actually to appreciate and glorify the pure devotee is a very prime business of bhakti. It's very pleasing to Krishna to hear his devotees glorified. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam, so much of it is the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, the glories of Bali Maharaj, in relation to the Lord. So, the glories of Srila Prabhupada is certainly a substantial subject matter for Krishna-conscious devotees, provided we go about it in the right way. But then we may say, yes, certainly Prabhupada's life is glorious and should be appreciated. But is it really fit to make it a subject of study, analysis and study? I would say it might be inappropriate if we just approached it merely in an academic way. For that matter, any Krishna-conscious subject matter cannot be studied the way it's done in mundane universities just for acquiring some knowledge. So it has to be done with bhakti, with realization, and with a desire to serve Srila Prabhupada. So the more we think about it, we start to think, well, what are the objectives of this course then? And they are to try to enhance each devotee's relationship with Srila Prabhupada. As Kalyapani Prabhu pointed out yesterday, he was saying Prabhupada is present. We don't want to think Prabhupada is gone somewhere or he's not present. So Prabhupada being present means that as a person we can develop a relationship with him. And this is very much wanted by every devotee coming to this movement now. Want a relationship with Prabhupada as the founder Charya, the Shiksha Guru. So this appreciation or study of his life can help us in that way. to come closer to him and develop a relationship of service. So I've just given some reasons why we ought to study and why it's important. I thought I'd like to ask you for a few minutes, for some of you to say why did you take this course, or what? How do you think it will be beneficial to study the life of Srila Prabhupada? What are your hopes for this course and that connection? Somebody say? You can just think of actually what your reasons are or what your meditation is about. Yes? Say loudly.
To gain some enthusiasm for the centennial celebrations.
You can hear what he said? To gain enthusiasm for the centennial observation of Prabhupada in 1996. Continuing into 1997 also, and thereafter. Sometimes I hear about the objectives of the centennial, and I wonder what they want to do after that year. Continue it, of course. Good. Yes, and I hope that we will also teach this course in 1996. Other reasons?
Bring back Srila Prabhupada just makes him so much more close. I mean, something happens in our life, Prabhupada had a similar thing like this, and it's very personal for me.
The more you're familiar with all and remembering all the little details of his life, it's a fact that when things happen in your own daily life, you think of a connection to Prabhupada, what he did, what he went through, what he said. And that also enriches your preaching to the devotees or the non-devotees. When at your fingertips or by your study or meditation, you have a lot of nice recall about all aspects of his life. Anyone else? Yes?
I think by learning about Srila Prabhupada's life, you can help us to develop a lot of work.
Huh. Very good. Heavy statement. We can develop love of God, nothing less than that. Prema Pumarto Mahan, the goal of life, by getting close in touch to Prabhupada. And that also removes that feeling of we want to get into Krishna consciousness, we want to study about Krishna Leela and Krishna's philosophy, not just reminisce about Prabhupada, but actually if we do this in a non-sentimental but in a Krishna conscious way, it can bring that very objective about. Just as it said that you cannot enter Krishna Leela unless you enter Chaitanya Leela. So we could say that the Prabhupada Leela is also necessary. For us it is. And these are the details, or this is the substance of Prabhupada Leela. Yes? Come enthused to preach. Seeing how he was so enthused to preach. Yes, and even the tactics of how he preached. I remember years ago when Eastern European countries were still underground, the one devotee told me that he was going into Poland. He said the devotees, they read this book, Planting the Seed, and they use it as a basis for how they preach. And it's like a real standard for them. They say, no, it says in Planting the Seed that when Prabhupada was in New York, he did this, and he did chanting like this, and he, when there was no opportunity to live in a temple, he lived like this. So examples of preaching for our own preaching. Examples from the greatest preacher.
I think that
to penetrate the Rita, Prabhupada is taking a lot of powerful studying the lineage of Lord Chaitanya's family up to date, so you can go and see and talk with people who are associated with different places. Lord Chaitanya was so vivid connection with Prabhupada will not turn into be a mythological figure, but very living and interesting.
Good. Like in those purports, it says that Udaran Datta Thakur or Vasudev Dat someone, and then the purport will say where he lived and who his family was, and you can even go there and see that place. So if you do that, you'll get in touch with them. Similarly with Prabhupada. All right, I'll go on. But it's nice that you participate like that. Because I want to make it clear that I cannot perform miracles. Don't expect that you'll just come to this class and I'll perform miracles. If you're thinking like that, to make Prabhupada present for you, it'll be a letdown if that's your expectation. But rather, it's something that we're going to do together by reading the assignments, by hearing attentively, by participating like you just did, then together we can evoke the presence of Prabhupada and appreciation for him. And that reminds me, when you get this outline, you'll see each day, like tomorrow we're going to discuss about the meeting that he had with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the first meeting. And later we'll be talking about how ISKCON grew. So, at least for a few classes, I have a few interesting things to bring in. We used to call in school show and tell, that I can show something. But when we talk about 26 Second Avenue, I have an excerpt of a tape of the kirtan from that period that we can all hear. When we talk about how he produced his Bhagavatams, I'll have a Bhagavatam that he did in India, and I can pass it around. So when you see the outlines coming up, if you can think of anything that would be interesting to an object maybe that I can get from the museum, or something that would be a good idea, you don't know exactly what I'm going to say, but you can suggest that when you talk about this, are you going to say this, or why don't you do this, and so on. If you have any show and tell inspirations, please let me know in advance so that I can do them. Or even afterwards, in the next day, I can do it. And don't be afraid to say things or ask things thinking that you may make a fool of yourself. I'm making a fool of myself by attempting to praise Prabhupada, and you may do that. Prabhupada said it's good to be always a fool before the spiritual master. At least we're making this effort of trying to glorify Prabhupada. That's a worthy effort. So we'll all fall short in our questions and our dissertation. But if we have the sincerity, it'll be successful. Any questions before we go on now to the childhood? Okay. So you remember the three ways that we want to study Prabhupada's life: as Leela, to learn Siddhanta, and to gain lessons for application. When we think of the boyhood, the childhood of Prabhupada in Calcutta, I think the tendency is that this we can best appreciate this in terms of Leela. Although there are lessons, and we will pick them up. So you can analyze and even speculate about how the symptoms of a liberated soul can be observed in his birth and his childhood. But this kind of analysis has to be done delicately, or you lose the essential charm of the child and his activities. The a feeling of love, as his parents had for him, can come to us when we hear about his activities. And love is something that it doesn't stand analysis. When I was preparing this lecture, I saw a verse about love in Vishwanath Chakravarti's book, translated as The Love Locket, in which Krishna asks Radharani some questions about love. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says about love, Radharani says to a Sakhi, "O Sakhi, if one tries to describe the topics of pure love to someone desirous of knowing about it, then whatever is described, as well as whatever is understood, is merely surface information, which cannot possibly convey the truth of such an indescribable phenomenon as love. Purest love is such that upon being investigated, it immediately disappears, and even upon not being analyzed, it also disappears." So we'll just try to remember and say the things that Prabhupada did. But we will not try to hide the fact that this child was to become the great saint and foundacharya of the Krishna consciousness movement, which would spread all over the world under his direction. So we can blend, as we think about Prabhupada's childhood, the two elements known as Aishvarya and Madhurya. When we discuss Krishna Leela, these terms come up. We didn't get our blackboard yet. We will get a blackboard soon. Aishvarya means worshipping God in his form with majesty and opulence. And so, in terms of the pure devotee, we can say, with Prabhupada, appreciating fully his greatness and all his achievements, never forgetting who he is. Even when you hear some small little story, the main thing for Aishvarya is to remember how he's an empowered Shaktivish avatar. And Madhurya, in terms of Krishna Leela, means the way the Brajabasis see Krishna. They don't care, they don't know whether he's God. They just love him for his form, for his activities, as they're attractive. Today we're talking about child, so the Vatsalya mood of Mother Yasoda is just to love Krishna for his naughtiness, for his beautifulness, and so on. And these things are combined when we appreciate the life of a pure devotee, Nitya Siddha. Here's a word, Nitya Siddha, that I didn't use yesterday when we were discussing the two forms of the pure devotee. We discussed Prakat and Aprakat. This is a little different in its usage. It means an eternally liberated soul, in contrast to Nitya Bandha, eternally conditioned soul. The conditioned soul may become liberated again, but the Nitya liberated was never, ever a condition. So some persons appear as human beings in this world, but they're not born of karma, they're eternally liberated. However, at every moment in their activities, that identity of their perfection is not always prominent. Although it can be observed. And there's a quote by Prabhupada about Nitya Siddha. There are two kinds of living entities. He defines them. Then he says, the one always forgets his relationship with the Lord. The other never forgets. By the order of the Supreme, the Nitya Siddha remains within this material world like an ordinary man, but his only business is to broadcast the glories of the Lord. Jai Dwaita Maharaj once asked Prabhupada in the morning walk, it sometimes appears that the pure devotee, spiritual master, makes mistakes. He may not remember a Sanskrit verse and so on. What is this? So Prabhupada said that if you see that way, that's your fault. It's not his fault. his perfection is not that he remembers every verse, and not that he has the knowledge of super soul, of every living entity and everything that's happening, but that he's fully engaged in serving Krishna and in preaching Krishna consciousness with no other element. So that is mentioned here also. This is his full absorption. All nitya siddhas within this material world may appear to toil like ordinary men, but they never forget their position as servants of the Lord. So this is particularly tasty and intriguing when he's just a child and he's not engaged in that preaching activity and is doing so many childish things, yet he has that eternal identity. I want to read a couple of stanzas from a poem in which I try to deal with this, or with these elements in recalling Prabhupada. It's called Early Days, and it tells some of the I'm picking up in the midst of memories of Prabhupada's activities. Eating puffed rice with his father, wanting two guns for two hands, it is sweet to recall, because he was the preacher to deliver us. There were signs of that, too. His father was a pure devotee. He is lying in bed, noise of horse-drawn carts and carriages outside, late at night, and family in bed, but father, returning after the day's work, is worshipping Krishna on the altar, trying to be quiet, not to waken anyone, but worshipping the deity. And the faint tinkle of the bell wakes Abhai, who turns and sees father and Krishna. So the Madhurya is predominant, but we see little traces that is a very extraordinary situation and person. And then another poem, this is called Through His Eyes. Now we cannot actually literally see through the eyes of another person, but to speak of Prabhupada. But this is an attempt based on evidence that he's given us of how he saw things as a boy. The Calcutta he saw. And the last line of the poem is maybe the only one in which we remember who he is. Through his eyes, as he cycles through Dalhousie Square, see Calcutta, the proud Britishers in carriages, water fountains playing in the green Maidan. Through his eyes, see his kind father, waking him for puris and kachuris, training him to play madrunga. His mother, Rajani, trying to tame him, trying to protect him with prayers and mantras. Through his eyes, see the black and white illustrations of Mahabharata. Sadhus come to his father's house. A Babaji comes chanting Harinam during the plague. He sees Radha Govinda every day, stands for hours beholding the Lord. He studies train schedules and fares to Vrindavan. In his heart is the Hare Krishna movement. So in attempting to keep this delicate balance between Aishwarya and Madhurya, one good way to see is through his father's eyes, because he has a combination of these perceptions. Prabhupada said, maybe he knew in recalling. He treated Abhai as his son, but he also prepared him for the career of a Shaktivish avatar in different ways. We would say, if we may be permitted to continue this analogy that's of Krishna Leela, that under the influence of Yoga Maya, not being really fully aware, yet his father made all kinds of preparations for the career of an empowered devotee. Or as Prabhupada said, maybe he knew. Prabhupada acknowledged his father in a dedication to Krishna book. To my father, Gaur Mohan Day, 1894-1930, a pure devotee of Krishna who raised me as a Krishna conscious child from the beginning of my life. In my boyhood ages, he instructed me how to play the madrunga. He gave me Radha Krishna Vigraha to worship, and he gave me Jagannath Ratha to duly observe the festival as my childhood play. He was kind to me, and I imbibed from him the ideas later on solidified by my spiritual master, the Eternal Father. So everything we know about Guru Mahan Day comes from the best, most reliable source, Prabhupada. As Prabhupada would say, to know God, you have to hear from authority. To know, just as to know who your father is, you have to know from your mother. So to know who Prabhupada's father was, to know Prabhupada's childhood, we have to hear from our spiritual father, Prabhupada. So some of the incidents that he has handed down to us about his father's guidance. One is that his father took him to the Radha Govinda Mandir every day. A very kind, very expert guidance thing to do. Make sure that his son would go every day, get the earliest impressions in youth or childhood to see the deity. You can see that temple still run down as it is in Calcutta, the Muluk Radha Govinda temple, and they have the deity worship goes on there. I was there a few years ago. It wasn't even on the main altar, it was on another room. But still, you can see the deity being dressed, just as Prabhupada went and saw it. Every day he used to see the deity for hours. So he must have seen the ceremonies of Artik and so on. Very beautiful deities. As I mention each of these things, if there's anything you want to say, you can raise your hand about Prabhupada's father taking Mr. Radha Govinda. Just to remember, or ask a question, so on. Then also he gave him Radha Krishna deities. Prabhupada remembers this and is grateful. He asked for them, but his father gave them. That's his father. His father gave him whatever he wanted. So he gave him Radha Krishna deities. But more than that, he himself was absorbed in Radha Krishna deity worship. He said, Prabhupada said that he was a cloth merchant, but his real activity was puj on a daily basis. That was more important, and that was a more important activity for him than going to the shop. So his son saw that as in the ringing of the bell in the middle of the night. Instead of seeing his father beating his mother, or seeing his father coming home drunk, something like that, some horrible impression in the child, he remembers ting, 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 waking up, little child, so impressionable in bed, and seeing his father bowing down before Radha Krishna. This was the person who would introduce Radha Krishna worship all over the world. Saw this as a child. He gave him a jungle lessons. Now that's a good one, especially because his mother didn't even think it was important. What good is this, a little child learning to play mahjonga? But his father had in mind that he would be a Bhagavad preacher and player of the mahjonga. So this is equipping him for what he will need in life. These are things you can follow when we get to application as parents today. He also allowed the Ratha Yatra festival. I'll put it that way rather than say he inspired it. So it's good that Prabhupada had such a lenient father to pick up on all his suggestions so that he could express himself and carry them out. Because as a child, he can't do what he wants. He has to have permission, has to have guidance. And if you have a little spark of something and your father encourages you, maybe a little child, he would like to paint pictures or write poetry. And the father said, "That's sissy stuff. No son of mine is going to do that." So then that becomes squelched and suppressed. But he said, "Father, I want to hold a Ratha Yatra." "Yes, my dear son." How? How can I help? Oh, I wanted a cart just like the real cart, and so on. And he even wanted fireworks. And got a book and was putting together explosives. Until his mother saw him and said, no, you cannot do it. He didn't say his father stopped even that. So he let him express all these pure devotional activities. So I said he allowed the Rati Yatra and assisted it and helped bring it about. So this is the form of love from his father, permissiveness, leniency. And as I'm getting all this from Prabhupada, not by guessing. Prabhupada gives us the impression that he was so much loved by his father. I was a pet son, always being given assurance that you're a very special person and we love you very much. He grew up, Prabhupada was so confident and of himself, so well adjusted, you could say, psychologically. And he mentioned this, not that it's of no account at all. He said, I had always great well-wishers who supported me and made me feel very worthy and important. One was my father, one was my spiritual master. He said, and now, in my old age, you are doing that, all my sons. So, he got that always from his father. Not like what we experience in dysfunctional families that leaves us nervous wrecks in need of some kind of therapy. You want two guns, you give him two guns. And every year he would buy him a very nice chudder, which he would get from Kashmir. Maybe as a cloth merchant, he was able to get the best of goods. And he saved one for his son. Affectionate, permissive. Another thing he did was he prayed to sadhus. To every sadhu who would come by, he would pray, please bless my son so that Srimati Radharani may be pleased with him and grant him her blessings. So when we're tracing out the two lives of Prabhupada and his eternal identity, this is a mind blower, this one, that his father was always praying for his intimate connection with Srimati Radharani. So Prabhupada was, at that stage, you could say he wasn't a Rupa Nuga. He was, eternally, but it wasn't manifest until he was solidified by his spiritual master. But his father started right in, every sadhu, praying that this boy can manifest himself as the servant of Srimati Radharani. He also prevented his son from becoming a lawyer, an English barrister. So that one uncle thought it would be a good idea, maybe they weren't rich, but maybe they had some means that they could send him to England, as so many Indians like to do, England and America. So his father objected, no, I don't need his money. I don't want him to become polluted by going to England. So that was a wonderful thing that he did. So that Prabhupada, when he went to England, he went so triumphantly to preach 1969 to the Beatles and so on. He said, my father didn't want me to come to England for those reasons, but now I have come for the right reasons. And then that brilliant piece of advice that his father gave him when Prabhupada got married and was not very attached to his wife, and Prabhupada started making private arrangements to marry another lady who he was attracted to, as Prabhupada tells it. His father said to him, my dear boy, you are eager to take a second wife, but I would advise you not to. It is Krishna's grace that your present wife is not to your liking. Take it as a great fortune. If you do not become too attached to your wife and family, that will help you in your future advancement in spiritual life. This is very unusual kind of advice, to encourage the son toward a detached sort of marriage that he can later become detached from. It doesn't seem like the advice you would give to every young man, but one who had a definite vocation for becoming sannyasi preacher, world empowered preacher. So we're all grateful. We make obeisances to his father. We're reading that nice poem, Brajabilas Stava by Raghunath Das Goswami. He prays to and remembers all the persons who take part in Krishna Leela, even ones who seem insignificant or even opposed to Krishna. And he makes some nice prayer to them for the part they play. So we also sincerely bow down to Gormahande for preparing Prabhupada's. Anyone have any comment about the role of Gormohan and his view of his son? Okay, yes. Prabhupada's father, when he would chastise him, he'd say, I have to do this for your own good. That's what Jagannath Mishra did also, in chastising his son, Nimai. And the Prabhupada said later, when he became Acharya of ISKCON, world-found Acharya, he said, if you have to discipline any child, first explain it to him, the same thing that his father had done with him, and that a child should be allowed to be completely free up to 5 years old. I like that expression Prabhupada said, that we would... We would play. We didn't have so much money, but there was always mangoes. We would run in the house, like run in one door and run out the other, and as we're running through, grab a mango. There was no shortage. Not that because we didn't have an automobile, we weren't happy. So those are also nice memories. Okay. Let's turn to his mother's viewpoint. There's a different viewpoint, and in this analysis, Aishvarya Madhurya, I say that her love is even more Madhurya, with less awareness of Aishvarya, of who he was to become. Prabhupada says that her love was centered on keeping him alive. So many accidents may happen to a child, and he may die from accident on the street or such and such thing. Disease, especially. So, she always wanted to keep him alive. And in that mood of our expressing gratefulness to these persons in Prabhupada's life, how grateful we are to her to protect him in his delicate boyhood years so that he could come to us. She's done a great service for not just as a mother, but for everyone. So she was the disciplinarian of Prabhupada. More than the father, because he wasn't in that mood. So to such a degree that after all, a child does have to be disciplined. And the father, he just wouldn't do it, that's all. So the mother had to do it. And she apparently was quite capable of doing this. If we can be permitted to play a little bit about saying how his parents influenced him, because in one sense, he's not an ordinary person who's influenced like that. But you can see the different things in Prabhupada's character. So this is a poem about his mother. Whomever Krishna protects, no one can kill. But Rajani loved Abai as her son, touching his forehead with her saliva, putting an iron bangle on his leg, offering her breast blood to demigods, all to protect him, to keep him alive, which was at least as important as Madrunga lessons. Didn't she know he would become a great preacher and savior of the fallen? She didn't care so much, as Yasoda didn't care whether Krishna was God. She cared for her son. She intimately shared his childhood. He would go nowhere without her permission, and for that she will always be remembered. His qualities come from Krishna, yet he appeared as her son. She could be stern and fiery, and so the son was like the mother. Later he would be fiery and loving and intimate with his disciples. Though like his father he would be lenient, like mother he would be fiery and stern. You must do it, she would try to force him. But he, being stubborn as she, threw himself down and banged his head, flailing fists, until his father came and acquiesced to whatever he wanted. a loving exchange, she and he, fighting in love, like Yashoda and Krishna. Prabhupada says, if she were alive now, she would simply be satisfied that I am well. So, in an incident like Gaur Mohan Day wanting Majanga lessons and the mother saying, what's the use of this? We may think that she's off. And because the father, he knew. But we shouldn't think that she was unimportant, because you could say she wanted him to just be alive and then everything could take place. And she, like a mother usually is, she was more intimate. She was always there. So much so that Prabhupada, he would, as a child, he would pull on his mother, Mommy, urine, mother, asking permission. He said, go ahead, you don't have to ask permission. And then, I don't know whether it was the mother or father who kept the money. He had some money he was given as an allowance. Father?
Mother.
So she would keep the money. That he got some money when his teeth, his baby teeth fell out. And then he had a fight with her and he said, I want my money back. I'm going to leave home. So this, there are things like that that went on between she and he, even getting into more quarrels than with his father. Now taking another viewpoint of his childhood, and that's Prabhupada's own viewpoint, reminiscing about it in his later age as our spiritual master. Little anecdotes could come at any time, even in a lecture, in a big public lecture, where it was very formal, he might suddenly come out. I know what we tried our best to gather them all for the Prabhupada Lilamrita, but now still I hear so many things listening to lectures, not just to his own students, but at any time he could come up with some little gem of a memory of something from his childhood. Although intimate conversations, he would really get into a string of such things. In a relaxed situation, like in his room in Mayapur, being in Bengal or near Calcutta, and he would be sitting there and the lights would go out and the devotees would bring a lantern in and Prabhupada would sit and talk about how the lights used, how they had no electricity and how electricity came to Calcutta, and so many things he would talk about. And what was his attitude toward the childhood? Very fond, very positive. For the parents, for the culture, for the environment. Not that because we had no automobile we were unhappy. It would evoke in him disgust for how things had turned out since then. How Calcutta was like a garden. It was so nice. Now it is like hell. And we have very positive impressions that he got. That's his viewpoint. Now another viewpoint, well, this is a partial one, we don't get too much, but we used to be able to get things from his sister, Baba Tarini. Her viewpoint was that she saw Prabhupada as her affectionate but worshipable older brother. And they had a very close relationship. They would share God-conscious sentiments. That Prabhupada was God-conscious even as a child, and other children, siblings, brothers and sisters, they would sometimes make fun. He's so absorbed in God-consciousness, not in career and so on. But he and his sister, they wouldn't mind what the others say. We will play with Krishna and so on. So that you could see that in her even up to the very end of Prabhupada's life. She was very, would always cook for him and be very close, but not like, and very familiar, but always thinking he's a very great person. Therefore the devotees were attracted to her when we could talk with her through a translator, because it's not that she would say things about him that would embarrass us or something. Her memories were always that he's so great. My brother. Anyone have any stories about her? Like, yes. So, speak loudly. Okay. Yeah. When Prabhupada would be lecturing on the Vyasa-san, she would go up to him and touch him and then go down and distribute that blessing to others. And he told her to stop. She was somewhat fatty, and one time she was talking with him, then she left.